Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. What's up, Facebook? Melody Carter. Good morning. Glad everybody's here. It's just popping in. Okay. We're here. Look here. Today, we're going to go through the Ahmaud Arbery trial. And we're going to come at it, as we always do, from some different angles, some different thoughts, some different things that you know, maybe y'all caught, maybe y'all didn't. And we're going to point out some things in there that America needs to understand of what went on in the trial. So hopefully Billy Clark can join us. I sent Billy a link. Hopefully he'll get in here. But in the meantime, let's say good morning to everybody. Izzy coming in. He's still trying to get breakfast down. John, mute your mic. You moving around. We're looking at your ceiling fan. It's nice. Look like a helicopter. Give me Vietnam flashbacks. You know, or that ain't John. I'm sorry. That's Travis. Anyway, good morning, John. What's going on, brother?
Good morning, everyone. Definitely a blessed week. I'm just grateful and happy to be here, man. And I'm ready to dive into this show, man. But definitely a blessed week.
All right, brother. Hey, now you're not getting off that easy. We're going to give you, you know, on this show, all y'all, you see us here, we support each other. You know, when we say we're brothers, we literally are. I mean, we're very in touch family-wise, success-wise. We stay in touch with each other, and we support each other here on this show. That's what we do. And, John, you know, brother, we keep lifting you up because you keep doing tremendous things. You got something that you launched. And good morning, Cindy. Talk to us about it, John. Talk to us, bro.
Yes. Black Friday was the launch day of my crypto coin that came out. Mike dropped dollars. I'm just fortunate, man. Just this morning, the chief technical officer sent me a text saying that through LinkedIn, he was reached by Facebook. And they said that they're interested in sitting down having a conference with us. As well as I want to shout this brother out, Rasul, who is the other kid's father, baby mother. And he's setting up a meeting with Puff and I to discuss him backing our coin. So a lot of great things are happening. I'm blessed. I'm fortunate. And I don't want to come off sound like I'm boasting or nothing, man, but God is good.
Hey, now when you say Puff, brother, I mean, you know, we do all this on our dimes and pennies, and we sometimes search couch cushions to do what we do here. So we don't have to kiss nobody's ass on this show. MSNBC, yes. Fox, nobody. We do what we do. You know, brother, who is, when you say Puff, who you talking about?
I'm talking about the only one, P. Diddy. Sean Combs, brother, I've just been fortunate enough to have met the guy, Rasul, who has his baby mother Lisa has his son Justin. And the guy who's Justin's stepfather and has a kid by Lisa, I happen to have met through business ventures, and he reached out to me last night, and we setting up a meeting. So hopefully, man, this goes well, man. So I'm talking about Bad Boy. I'm talking about Puff Daddy. Thank you.
All right, bro. Now, I'm going to put this up front before I go to any of the co-hosts. And certainly, I don't ask anybody to do what Stan does. Stan will be standing. On this show, everybody is speaking for themselves, you know. But we all speak for the show. And we all stand behind all of us on the show. And for Stan, John, with you, I'm going to tell you right now, brother. You know, I don't know jack about Bitcoin, how it works, what works with it, how it does. But because it's your Bitcoin, and I'm going to tell you, that hoodie picture in the background, that'd be a hell of a thing to put on a Bitcoin. Anyway, bro, hey, I'm going to tell you right now, my pledge to you, I'm going to buy $100 up front. I'm going to buy $100 up front. That's Stan. You know, because you've gone, John, you've gone from being in prison, gang leader, drug dealer, getting your life right, a registered voter, being on this show, contributing, saving lives, being positive. You're living everything that folks say that anybody who has never been to prison should do. So coming from prison and doing what you do, you had to travel twice the road. Brother, I support you. You got $100. You got $100 coming from me.
Hey, Stan, I appreciate the $100, but I think if you reach into the curse jar after Joe finished talking, I may get $110 out of the jar.
Well, when I reach into the curse jar after Travis get done talking, you might get $200.
Hey, going to drive you together, man, I might walk away a rich man.
Yeah, yeah. You can shut it down after the show today.
You know, rich with knowledge, my brother.
Hey,
yes,
sir, brother. And I would
rich money.
I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge Facebook people, Harrisburg, PA, Atlanta, Georgia, you know, Waco, Texas, no specific order, Cindy Cramper, Sharp. Cindy's always there. Pat Schroeder, always there. You know, Melanie, appreciate y'all. Love you guys. Let's go down. Izzy, what's going on, brother? Good morning.
Good morning, all. Happy to be here, as always. Happy belated turkey genocide thing. ready to get started on the topic? So we have a lot to talk about. It's been a crazy week for me. I officially start my job as the deputy editor of the crime report.
All right, bro.
Monday. I'm the deputy director of the Center of Media Crime and Justice. I have these two titles now. I have no idea what I'm doing, but, you know, I'll keep it.
Hey, that throws some pennies in the jar, is.
Exactly. So anybody who's listening, go to the Crime Report and subscribe for some objective, informative journalism.
How did they get there? The website?
It's thecrimereport.org, and you can subscribe. We're doing fundraising right now, so you can donate. We're a really good resource if you're interested in all things criminal justice.
And for you guys listening to what Izzy said, how I met Izzy was through a neutral party who introduced us. And Izzy was doing stories on police reform and the need for police reform. And we hooked up. And, I mean, we must have been on the phone the first time we talked about maybe an hour. In the interview, probably 3 hours. And we really,
it was like
really,
2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, we really went in. And, he's a journalist. Journalists will take what you give them. But what really was interesting is I've dealt with journalists. I understand how journalists operate. You know, give me my sound bites. Let me move on my career. But he was generally concerned. That's why he's here today. And so, you know, I opened up to him about a lot of things. Some of it he hasn't published, but he could. But, you know, so he knows a lot more than when you read his articles and you think, well, how much more does this guy know? Trust me, he knows a lot. You know, but he has integrity, and some things I told him, you know, that's between me and you, he's kept it there. But Izzy could shock the world if he wanted to, and I appreciate you, brother. Love you. And Olivia, for letting you every Saturday be here, bro. I got to give a shout-out to your wife, Olivia, because, you know, being on this show is not the easiest thing. We're calling each other in the middle of the day. Sometime at night, you're at dinner, but you take the call, you're at your mom's, you know, and I appreciate you being here, dude. We love you. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, Big Chief, what's up? Tell us, what's going on down in the Big Whack area?
Busy. You know, that time of year, man, you know, Thanksgiving and I guess, hope, happy, belated, what you call it, Izzy?
Genocide.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, so, I mean, it's that time of year, you know, there's a lot of people in need. So we've been busy ramping up around here, trying to give back to the community. We got Blue Santa, I got Toys for Tots. We got all kinds of things happening. So it'll be busy for me for these next couple of weeks. So you'll see plenty of me on social media, I'm sure, pushing stuff, trying to get donations and tracking people down and getting some of our corporate partners to give us some cash. But hey, man, other than that, things are good. Ready for this topic. it's going to be an interesting conversation. I think people are going to get some good information out of this screwed up case. I'll just put that one. I want to feel the curse, Jarvis.
But Chief, I can't let you out. I can't let you off the hook that easy because I want to talk a minute about what we call Blue Santa. And I want to tell people what makes Blue Santa unique is that we're not talking about agencies who go out and search for people who need. We're talking about officers who deal with everyday people who need. And they know firsthand. They know these people by name. The people know the officers. I mean, everybody talks about grassroots. This is about as grassroots as you're ever going to get in a giveaway. It just simply is. And you know, Waco does a really huge, huge Blue Santa program and Toys for Tots. And, you know, the Marines donate. And, I mean, we used to go into a room. And, I mean, I'm talking, this is not a small room. It's a huge room. And it was piled from the ceiling to the floor with donated toys from people in Waco, McLennan County area. And you could literally go in there, pick anything you wanted, and they would tell us in roll call. Get some trash bags, fill them up with as many toys as you can get in your car. And when you're out on calls, give them away. And most of us already had this mental list of people we knew couldn't afford, didn't have, couldn't get. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say, there are a lot of officers that you guys don't see. They don't put it out. But they go buy Christmas trees. They don't just give the toys. They go out of their pocket. Sarge, I got to go 10-8. That means I'm busy unless it's important. Can I go to Walmart? They'll call them on the phone. Can I go to Walmart? I want to do, you know, they don't do it to be noticed for the department or for the citizen. They go do it because dropping off a bunch of toys when you've been to two domestics at this house, nonviolent, but two domestics, and the people are trying to do the best they can. And they're not able to do it. And to the officers listening, I'll share something real quick. If you think you don't make a difference, I went to a domestic on Christmas Eve. No, I'm sorry. It was the day after Christmas with another officer when I was at Waco, Hispanic house. We walk in the front door. The husband is at the dining room table crying. The wife called the police. It was non-physical. The husband, when you see a Hispanic man crying, that tells you it's devastating. Whatever's going on is important because that's something they're not going to do. They're just not going to do it. That's the culture. And we go in, me and the other officer, and I'll give you his name. You know, good officer, Jay Sunday. Good officer, and he's still at Waco. And we went in, and for some reason that morning, before I even went to work that night, I had gone to the credit union and got $200. I didn't need it. It was just me. I don't need no money, but for some reason I did. But that night when I go in and Jay is talking to the wife and I go up and I'm talking to the husband at the table, and he showed me their electric bill. And he wasn't able to pay the bills, and this guy was distraught about it. And when he slid the electric bill over to me, the amount of the electric bill was $200. And I reached in my wallet and gave it to him. I said, go pay your bill. Go to HEB right there on North 19th Street. Go right across the street, pay your bill. And then I left, and I went. And me and Jay, we went and we got all these toys that were in this room at the police department because they had children, but they had a Christmas tree up with nothing under it. There was nothing there. There were no where things were unwrapped yesterday. There was nothing there. We bought all these toys back. And, you know, these people were floored. They were at, and he came, and his wife was asleep, and I said, you know, you guys have Christmas and then celebrate New Year's. And it's really ironic how, and I'll post the picture, you know, later, but what's really amazing about that is before I retired, I actually went to meet, I saw this family again. They recognized me before I recognized them because I honestly didn't recognize them. And today they own a boutique. In fact, I believe they own two businesses. And that little spark lit their fire to solidify their marriage, to gave them freedom to just be people and pursue what we call the American dream. And so, I mean, it's not about anything I did or Jay did or the police department did. It's just about recognizing and caring. And it does make a difference to the individual officer. When you leave this job, the career is going forward. They don't care about you. And that's not in a bad way. I'm not saying that in a bad way. You know, we got to move on. But for you, when you sit back and examine your life when you retire, like I do often, did I make a difference? I didn't save the world or Texas or McLennan County, me and Jay, but we saved that family that night, that time. And it's transferred to their kids. So, Chief, Blue Sand is very important. You know, where can people, if they want to donate to Blue Sand, where can they do that?
They can go to the department website. There's two ways you can do it. You can contact us either through the social media page, the City of Hewitt Police Department, or actually Hewitt Police Department, the Hewitt Police Department. That's the name of it. But you can also go to the website, cityofhewitt.com, go to the police tab. There's an application on there. So even if you know somebody that is in need this year, get us the information. We have folks already identified, which we knew going in, just as Stan said, because we go on these calls and we deal with people on a daily basis. And this year is especially trying for a lot of folks because of, you know, coming out of the pandemic and still being here and work and all that kind of stuff. So they can apply there. We're going to take as many as we can. I've already got quite a bit of donation from some corporate sponsors from our community.
Good.
Through some grants that it's going to be a good year for folks. We're going to make it happen for a lot of people. So, I know it's toys and it's identified as Blue Santa, but we're going to be able to do, you know, potentially food and things of that nature too. So this will be something that's going to be continuing ongoing deal. It's the first year the RHG has done it. We did it. We just didn't officially call it anything. And, you know, it was more of an internal, in that situation, you don't necessarily see a lot of it because we're not running around posting pictures about it. We just go do it, you know. So it's about taking it to the people and getting them what they need versus, you know, any glory for the PD. So any social media stuff or posts that you see from us, it's going to be about, hey, maybe you can kick in a little to help us out. So we'll see. We just launched the other day, and I appreciate you sharing that, Stan, and putting it out there because I know you've got quite a big following of folks, and so. So anyway, it's going to be a good year. Got a lot of good steam behind it, so we're ready to push forward through it. So,
hey, amen. I appreciate you. For those that think that all officers are bad, officers don't do anything, it would shock a lot of you if you knew the things they did out of their pocket that nobody knows but them and maybe their wife when she says, where'd this money go? But I'll tell you, for the officers, I can only speak for the male officers. When you reach in your pocket and that $50 and that $100 has gone out of the checking account and the wife comes at you and says, where does it go? When you tell them, you know what the answer is always? Okay, good job.
Yeah.
You don't get blowback. So with that, let me go on up, Big Joe. What's going on, bro?
Can't follow that. But I will say this. One of the problems that I have is – when you do it, when you do give money, the devil's busy. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
And many times it gets misconstrued by a lot of people. I mean, I won't even go into what I've done because that's not the point. But I've been called to carpet for innocent stuff. And I just walk past because it's why entertain them? But I'll leave it at that. Well, good morning. Let's get this rolling.
All right, brother, let's go down. We got a special guest in the house, a host of the point. And I'm going to tell you all, this is a good friend of mine, Travis G. Evans from Waco. Good friend of mine.
John.
Travis can be absolutely bombastic, but Travis is respectful. when he comes, you know, and he knew, he said, he always, and you guys that have heard him on the show, this is the voice that you hear sometime that calls in. Travis will say, I'm never going to be disrespectful on your show. I'm never going to be. And you know, I wanted Travis here on this topic today, since we're both here in Georgia. And I want to say to him, and tell Catfish Kim, I said, what's up? And good morning, Travis. What's going on, brother?
Good morning, gentlemen. How's everybody doing today?
It's all good, man. You ready?
Oh, I'm always ready. Locked and loaded, ready. Just, like I said, we can bring it up. Let's do it. I got so much love to spread among you guys. I don't know what to say. Too much love. Let's just get it going.
All right, let me see. I'm gonna start out, and let's put everything in context. First off, I wanna talk about, before we get to even get to the Ahmaud Arbery verdict, I wanna talk about Daryl Brooks. This is the idiot / knucklehead / here comes the T word. Everybody strap in, folks. Terrorist. That's right. To me, he's a terrorist. Just like when in Charlottesville, when the guy drove the truck down through the parade and killed Amanda, I can't remember her last name, it's slipping my mind, but killed her, and we all wanted terrorism. White supremacist drives, pickup truck, kills all these protesters. This guy, I don't care that he's black, should be seen as a terrorist. If anybody, when I first saw it, I had my TV down, I saw the video of his vehicle past that little girl just dancing, celebrating Christmas. And I just glanced at the TV. I'm like, what the hell's wrong with this knucklehead? You know, that little girl looked at him like, what the hell? You know, and then we come to find out everything that he did. You know, I just want people to view it. Not selective outrage now. Out stands opinion. View it from the same lens we view Charlottesville. The exact same lens. You don't get to now say, well, he was black and his rap album wasn't selling. I don't give a shit. He should have still been in jail by my standards. He still should have been locked up. He should never have even been out there. And I'm going to open the floor with that one before we even get to the main topic, and it's open.
Well, there's no question that this guy should have got what they charge him with. That's going to be interesting. Now, will he get domestic charges, domestic terrorism charges?
No.
I doubt it. The vehicular homicide will probably be, if that, manslaughter should be taken off the table because it's intentional. There's a difference between manslaughter and homicide. Intent. We can prove that he had intent when he went past the first the first blockade. The other thing is that he used a weapon. The car is now a weapon. This guy, I can see them building a case for a mental plea. I'm telling you, watch what I tell you. They're going to come with a mental plea, guilty but reason of insanity. Now, in Illinois, we changed that law because it used to be in Illinois, if you were found guilty by a reason of insanity, you would go to a mental institution, and in theory, they can release you before you hit the prison. Well, we changed that. Now, if you get that plea, your time does not begin until you hit prison. So you can spend 10 years in the asylum mental institution, but your time does not start. So you, again, understand that. It used to be once you went into that mental institution, your time ran, not anymore. And I can see them trying to do that in that state.
Chief, I see you nodding. What's he thinking?
No, I agree with Joe. I don't think you're going to get the domestic terrorism charge on him or terrorism charge. I don't think that's going to happen because it just, you know, you can tell right away that it wasn't going to occur. Even though using the vehicle, I mean, when I teach active attacks, that's part of the active attacks now when we start talking about that, guns, knives, and vehicles, because that's been prevalent. It's been prevalent for a long time. People are just not really aware of it. But I'm going to go along with Joe. I think that they're prepping for the mental and insanity plea, even though it's willful and intentional. And I mean, if you look at the entire video, if you watch the pieces that are out there, it's it's a pretty horrific event. And so, you know, I kind of wish they would have done some things differently to keep that vehicular traffic from getting through there on that type of parade. That I hate to say it, but in this day and age, when we do events like that, that's something that you have to consider, actually keep in mind, just for the safety of all persons there. So I'm going to go with Joe on this one. I think that you're not going to get that charge, but they're going to prep him for an insanity plan.
Okay, now before we move on, let me introduce this into that same topic. I've been searching frantically. I've seen the volume of Facebook posts, particularly from black people on Facebook. Now, here we go, folks. Strap in. I told you, this is not your grandfather's radio show over here. We bring it real. I am not seeing the level of involvement, proactivity, that I saw from Charlottesville, and I have to say why, and I go back to the term I use, selective outrage. We're willing to accept the act to some degree, depending on the color of the victim and or the suspect, but we don't want to just quite deal in and condemn the act and condemn the person that did it. And that may be one of the reasons why America is stumbling in trying to find justice today. And before I go to our guest, let me drop down. Izzy, I see you thinking.
I mean, I from what I've read about this case and everything, I agree with you guys about they'll try for the insanity plea. I don't know whether or not this guy was nuts or not. I'm interested to see what radicalized him, because he was clearly radicalized to a certain degree. I think the reason people are having trouble talking about this is because, or some of the reasons people are talking about this is because he went after, I mean, he was shown his posting basically going after white people and saying that white people are the enemy and white people are the devils and we have to go after them. So I'm interested to see what role social media and the amount of radicalization that's going on in certain avenues on that platform had in this guy's actions. Because, I mean, he's got a rap sheet a mile long. It goes back like 22 mm-hmm. years. So mm-hmm. that's a whole other issue of him, why he was continuing to release. He was out on like a barely like $1,000 bail for the previous crime, and they were actually yeah. looking for him.
Domestic
when
violence.
He went to the parade, they were actually looking to arrest him again. So there's some interesting pushback against that, because that city and that county has been practicing some of the more lenient sentencing ideas mm-hmm. that are being tossed around now in a lot of states and counties. So there's a little bit of pushback on that, but. I'm interested to see how this goes. It's terrible. I will spit the reason you're probably not getting the outrage that you got behind the Charlottesville thing is because of that flipping of the dynamic, so to speak.
Okay, let me go before I go to Travis. Big John, what you thinking, bro?
Yeah, I think that it's not a person that's living in America that does not have some sorts of insanity. But insanity, when it comes to committing crime, you don't see Jim Devlin going out there shooting up a bunch of people and then going to court and say, well, I was insane when I did it. People do calculated things because you can't be insane, commit a crime, and calculate things. So, well, if I go through this way, and I could get here and I could hit all these people or I could do this. People calculate things. And it's sad that courts are manipulated and the system is being manipulated. One of the lead attorneys who started this insanity defense was famous from out of New York appellate attorney, as he helped me out. He was on the OJ case as an appellate attorney, Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz. He even wrote a book about how the courts are allowing people to come up with these mental health defenses and insanity defenses, and they're misusing the law in the way that it was intended. And when we start talking about reform, this is something because everybody has some type of abuse coming up, some type of something in their family, someone who was on drugs, someone who was sexually abused. everyone experienced that in America. So are we all now entitled to commit crimes and then plead insanity? Just my thoughts. And you're absolutely correct about, and I've been saying this for the longest, that the African-American community and Latino community, we seem to be a little less sensitive when it comes to one of us committing a crime. A crime on the community is a crime on the community. Mm-hmm. And until we start to look at things and stop trying to justify why he did this, oh, because his family wasn't being fed and they were poor. Until we stop this and start taking responsibility for ourselves, we're going to continue to have this type of response.
Amen, brother. Let me drop down to our guest, Travis G. Evans. Travis, first off, come in, introduce yourself. Take a minute, talk about the point, tell everybody where they can find you. You're looking all shocked. Hey, come on, brother.
Well, once again, I'm a host of a minuscule talk show. It's called The Point with Travis G. Evans. I have a couple of co-hosts on my show, law enforcement, and I do have, Tyrone K. Dumbo on there. We kind of tackle the issues from a different perspective. Because our show is opinionated, and we do have a lot of emotion on our show. Like the emotion I'm going to give y'all in a few seconds about this whole case, this whole situation. Now, maybe some of you guys, my show is on Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. If you guys want to come on, and I see Joe on there all the time saying, what's up, brother? I would love for Joe to come on and spread some knowledge, and John, too, so. You know, guys, ever get a chance to come on, please, by all means. Sometimes I get out there on that ledge. I'm so far out there, I don't know if I can make it back. And I might need you guys to throw me a rope or come out there and get me, because me, myself, I don't too much care about feeling anymore. Feeling is, to me, overrated. We can't keep injecting emotion and feeling into stuff that happens that we know going to happen anyway. All right, so with that being said, this whole situation was, once again, a domestic. And I tell everybody this. If I was the chief of police, I don't care how mad they would get at me. If I don't get at least four officers to respond to a domestic, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, these one or two officers that go to these domestics that don't go home afterwards, this is getting to be silly. And we've had several cases in Georgia. Officers responded to a domestic and got their heads blown off. This is the dumbest reason on the planet for anybody, and I repeat, anybody, to go when you consider it, well, it's only one person. He beat his wife, so it's only two of us, and we can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out you can't handle it. I don't want to see any more dead cops over something as silly as a domestic. I don't want to see it. Secondly, I posted an article on The Point this morning, and it came on my page. I don't know if anybody saw it, that certain leaders in the community are trying to do a GoFundMe to raise money, believe it or not, for bail. This dude's bail is $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me that the black community is going to come together and put $5 million toward this dude's bail. They even gave him a bail. After you bailed him out the last time, he ran over a girl, a young lady, I think it was his ex or whatever. He ran over her on $1,000 bond. He's out. And he does it again. And y'all still giving bail? I'm just floored by this.
You know,
once again, we can't put emotion in there.
You know,
and
Travis,
just make sure we clear on that.
Just wondering why all that money is being put towards. $5 million would go a long way to feed a hell of a lot of hungry families, especially in the holiday season. I'm crazy like that. I just happen to give a crap about decent people. That's just me.
Let me ask you.
Stop trying to put together something to make to prove a point that's already been proven. We know that in certain instances, not all, that depending on your skin color, you can get a bond. You can get this. You can get that. You can get off on murder. We know this. Keep trying to prove your point.
Mm-hmm.
This has already been exposed.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
I think it's funny because I think I know where Travis is going with this, but I will say this. For the elephant in the room, can black folks be racist? Yes.
Yep.
Let's talk about some real shit here. You know, the reality is we can be as racist as they are. do we have those elements? And what you have is, you know, we keep trying to equivocate and say, well, you know, if the laws do this for them, then they should do this for us. And that's not always the case. We talk about bail reform. We talk about judicial reform. We talk about all these reforms, but we forget one basic issue. And again, either you like this one, I'm going back to my favorite part. If you're not a registered voter, hey, it don't mean nothing. And I agree that, you know, we keep putting in the wrong people. There's no question about that. But again, with this knucklehead, and I will call him a knucklehead, he should not see the light of day. Here in Illinois, we had a bail reform, restorative justice idea, and I'm totally against it because what it did was, while it was a warm and fuzzy moment, it was a great idea for the liberal socialist movement, it did nothing for the people who were under attack, middle-class America. What does middle-class America look like? Look at this screen. There it is. We're the people that are getting our asses whipped because of these so-called reforms. We are also the people that are not putting ourselves in those positions where we can give the knowledge. Nobody asked anybody on this panel what they thought about reform and how it should look. And that's where I'm at. I mean, that's...
And Joe, what's amazing about what you're saying is Stan doesn't really care whether they ask me or whether they don't. I really don't care. I mean, we're here every Saturday. But I'm going to ask this. Why haven't they asked anybody who is on the comment on the Facebook Live? Because we got some Facebook Live people sharp as a tack. And they are on point. And they talk about these topics oftentimes in greater detail than we do on the show because we're concerned with time. But why isn't a journalist reaching out to them? Interesting comment. Can you give me a little more on your point? And I think America, justice has come to the point to where there are those who think, who have never experienced it, but have their philosophy of what it should look like, black or white. There are those who work in it that don't give a shit because it's a check. I'm sorry, that's the way it is. Folks can say, oh, that's not wrong, everybody. No, I'm talking about the profession. We don't even have the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act passed yet. So don't anybody come at me and tell me that, well, we're working on it. That's bullshit. We're not working on it. We push it to the back burner. Because when Asians experience violence for 4 to 5 months, their bills soar through. And part of that is the black community, we have a bad habit of jumping off of our issues and our causes and supporting everybody else. See, that is that kind spirit, that soul. And that is why I say, and y'all are going to hear me say it throughout this show, forgiveness. I have no more forgiveness to give. I don't. I'm fresh out. At 59, I'm done. Forgiveness without reform is foolishness. You're asking to be a victim. Trent, we're gonna move forward into the next topic. Since we're on the verge, I mentioned forgiveness. Since we're going there, y'all, we're gonna get into this.
Just interject one of like just a couple of things.
Sure.
We're not going to touch Joe's voting thing today. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole. But I will say that the narrative of the middle class being under attack is one of the main narratives that led to the 94 crime bill, which is now causing us a lot of the problems that we have today, just number one. And number two, restorative justice practices aren't inherently ineffective. I think what this demonstrates in some ways is that if we just do restorative justice practices, but we don't also bolster social services, bolster treatment, bolster diversion, if we just continue to do this, ooh, I've got an idea, and let's put it out there without following it up with the protections needed to help it succeed, including stopping these abolishing the policing movements, because you can't put these restorative justice practices into effect without guardianship. There have to be people to help protect these movements go through. So I think if we keep putting forward restorative justice practices and doing, like Joe said, having these big, like, oh, aha moments where we all feel good, but not following that up with the social services needed to help those things work, we're going to keep seeing stuff like this happen.
You know, hey, Stan? Yeah, go ahead, John.
Real briefly, I think it was Travis who said that he used the vehicle in one past incident, and then here he goes again and still gets a bond. And I always try to share from my experience, and I recall being out on a case. I won't talk about that, but and I was given a low bond, and I bonded out. And I remember my mother sitting me down and saying, she said, "You know why you haven't gone away yet?" She said, "They're waiting for you to do something real serious. They're going to keep leaving you out in the community to do what you're doing until you finally hit that big, big, big case that they really want with you." So I'm saying that, I'm sharing that, and I'm sure you guys can relate to is that sometimes, man, you know, people are used in a way and not know that they're being used because you know that this person is a danger, not only to himself, but to the community at large. And I think this is one of those cases where this guy is a dangerous dude, and they're going to let him back out, and he's going to probably cause more chaos.
You know, let me do this, John. I want to transition to one other thing that I, and this is personal to me, I'm simply not going to let it go. It's a pet peeve of mine, and I'm not going to let this go. You know, the comment by Congresswoman Berber against Ilhan Omar.
Oh, Jesus.
I am. Oh, no. You know, Envy, I'm telling you. You know, it's bigger than what she said. It's much bigger than what she said. We're in a climate as to where, and Trump supporters on the page, don't get your feelings all hurt because I'm going to say this. This man ushered in a climate of disrespect, condescension, sheer ignorance, brutality, racial animus. He ushered in that. And everybody now has grasped onto that because they want to be as famous as he is. They want him to bow down to them. And it's amazing, and I posted it on my page. She issued an apology. You know what? There are sometimes an apology ain't enough. It ain't enough. You said how you felt or what you believed. And I think this, for lack of a better word, and I know folks will come at me and they go, "Well, you're Christian. You should forgive." Stop it already. Forgiveness is my personal choice. I can't forgive what she said, because she meant what she said. She did it in the media. She did it on Twitter. She thought about it. She meant it. And she said it. And I'll go back and say, forgiveness without reform is foolishness. And Maya Angelou said, when people show you who they are the first time, believe them. Go ahead, John.
But understand something else. You let somebody else off the hook. Don't let off Gozar, the Republican congressman from Arizona, who did an anime showing him cutting off the head of Ocasio. Now, don't get me wrong. I am no fan of Ocasio. I am not. However, there is a thing, believe it or not, the two houses of government actually have this thing called a rule of decorum. And since this president, former president, they have just abandoned that. I mean,
it's destroyed.
Trust me when I tell you, when you go to D.C. and you go and step into the House or the Senate, there are rules that you have to follow. There are rules of how you dress. There are rules of how you approach the podium. There are rules how you introduce a bill. That's gone out the window with this guy. I mean, civility is gone. But for this guy to get off the hook, doing an anime, first of all, when we talk about intent, which leads, segues into another issue, when you take the time to make a cartoon, and once we move to the next one,
I'll say this, and this is my opinion, and I pay for this, so I'm going to say it. Folks can get twisted, leave, I don't care. I'm trying to weed out my Facebook anyway. You know, black folks are the most forgiving folks on planet Earth. We absolutely are, period, point blank. We are the most forgiving people. We live in a system and a culture. We're going to show it as we progress through this show, where this justice system is inherently racist, inherently corrupt, and now and then some good people come in and make a good decision, like we saw here in Georgia. But it is that way. It's been that way. And it's not all because there are bad white people. It's because some of us follow black leaders who don't do anything either other than sit and eat shrimp. and stand up and put their fist up in the air on MSNBC. That's a fact, too. Some of our lawyers. But we, you know, we are forgiving. And I think for America to constantly use the forgiveness card on us and we graciously accept it, that's bullshit. For me, if you hit me with your left hand and then while your right hand is drawn back, somebody yell, well, you should forgive. Sorry. I'm going to do, here come a familiar term, stand my ground. Huh? That part. That's where I think in Ilhan Omar, we've heard this constantly. These racist remarks to come out. We've watched what happened at the Capitol. We know how not all Republicans or not all conservatives, but we know how a demographic of these people feel, along with the silent Democrats who haven't said anything either. We need to call their names out too, because there's always a Trojan horse. So I wanted to bring that out, and that was a pet peeve of mine. I called Joe last night. I said, I'm going to talk about this because I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. The racial attacks always come against the minority Congress people and people in the Senate. And they're always brought by the same demographic of self-righteous evangelical people that all of y'all who will be rolling in the aisles tomorrow at church, speaking in tongues, so self-righteous, you condone it and sign off on it because you don't condemn these people. James Baldwin said, I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. With that, let me move into the topic of the day. We wanted to talk about the McMichaels and Mr. Bryan trial.
The News 4 Jax I-team has been looking into Johnson's track record as the district attorney for five counties. She was their top prosecutor for a decade. I-team investigator Vic Michelucci shows us how other attorneys have raised red flags long before the Arbery homicide.
Jackie Johnson got international attention as the top prosecutor for the Ahmaud Arbery case, but she had been the district attorney in Southeast Georgia since 2010 when the governor of Georgia appointed her. During her 10 years in office, she was in charge of several high-profile cases, including some that are controversial. This cell phone video showing the shooting death of Ahmaud Arbery caused outrage, coming out 2 months after Glynn County Police and then-District Attorney Jackie Johnson decided to not charge the three men who chased him down. That ended up putting other cases she worked under the microscope. This 2010 video shows two Glynn County police officers shooting and killing Caroline Small after she led them on a chase. Cops had her car pinned and she was unarmed when they fired. Johnson presented the officer-involved shootings to a grand jury, but defense attorney Bill Adkins told the I-team she made several legal missteps. Johnson provided the officers' defense attorneys with evidence before she presented it to a grand jury. Johnson went before the grand jury without presenting an indictment, and she allowed defense attorneys to participate in the grand jury hearing by asking questions. No charges were filed against the officers.
She violated that plainly, unequivocally, and there was no consequence other than the fact that two men went free.
One of the officers, Corey Sasser, would later become a fugitive on domestic abuse charges. And in 2018, he killed his estranged wife and another man before turning the gun on himself. Another lawyer who questioned Johnson's legal practices was the district's former chief public defender, Kevin Goff, who says there were violations long before the Arbery case.
What about the thousands of other people who have been run through the criminal justice system and the tens of thousands across the state? What's being done to make sure that these kinds of problems don't happen again?
So are you saying that you feel, in your opinion, that some defendants did not get a fair trial when Jackie Johnson was district attorney?
I have no doubt that defendants did not get a fair trial. I have no doubt that people that were innocent under the law went to jail. And, you know, the sad thing is trying to figure out who they are is difficult.
The two sparred frequently in court. Goff was the court-appointed defense in the 2013 case where two teens killed 13-month-old Antonio Santiago
while his mother was pushing him in a stroller. Goff says Johnson's indictment shows his complaints for years had merit, especially since the former police chief was also indicted in a subsequent corruption case.
I think that's a pretty damning indictment of the way law enforcement has been operating in Linn County for some time. So, you know, it's troubling, and I'm sure the community is troubled by it.
Johnson blamed the controversy over Arbery's death for her election defeat last year. Independent candidate Keith Higgins collected thousands of signatures to get on the ballot and won. He's now the district attorney. I'm Vic Micolucci, Channel 4, the local station.
Thank you, Vic. Our coverage continues right now on news4jax.com. We posted a...
In that video clip, Kevin Goff, who you all heard, who spoke up against Jackie Johnson, district attorney, who was not even willing to bring this trial up in front of a judge. She wasn't willing to do it. But now, Kevin Goff, some of you probably applauded, boy, this guy is speaking the truth. And he talked about the corrupt cops who she wouldn't prosecute, who later on, one took their own life and killed another man, and the other one was arrested. This is the same guy. Hello, people who did research and watched the trial. This is the guy who stood up in that court and made a remark about black pastors, which I didn't like. But we can take just that remark in that trial where he's trying to get his clients off by any means necessary, whether we like it or whether we don't. We can condemn him. He's racist. He's this, he's that. You just heard it. Back in September, calling out the district attorney who wouldn't even bring charges against officers. And in this case, same guy. So, I mean, we got to be very careful when we take a moment and we say this person is racist because they said this in the courtroom. None of the media today is playing what this guy said back in September about that district attorney who has been arrested, whose cases are under review.
Let me throw this at you and everybody on this call. One thing that really stands out in this case is the fact that they let that crime scene go. There, and there in itself,
oh God,
is a crime.
Oh God.
There, most people don't understand how crucial the crime scene is. The fact that you let that crime scene go is a charge in and of itself. It's a crime.
Good morning,
so now you have what's called a compound crime.
Let's unwrap this. Good morning, and thank you, because we're going to unwrap this. First thing is, I heard the defense attorneys say in their closing statements that Ahmaud Arbery never ran to any of the citizens for help. Now, you know, history has shown us it doesn't take a whole lot to go back and look at history and see what typically happens to black males who run up to somebody white's door and bang on the door and ask for help. Unexpected. If you're not shot by the homeowner, you're shot by the police or arrested or humiliated. That is a fact, not in every instance, but we know it is a fact. For those of us who are black, it goes to our mind. My second question becomes, in this case, what happened to all of the citizens who we see in the videos were on the streets when the pickup trucks were chasing Ahmaud? Why didn't any of these citizens call the police and say, hey, there's some pickup trucks chasing a citizen? You didn't have to say he was black, just a citizen. None of them picked up the phone. Says a lot for that community, doesn't it? Says a lot for why a mob might not have knocked on that door, doesn't it? Then we move forward. We've got the shooting. Ahmaud is dead in the street. You let these guys take these pickup trucks home, never photographed, never processed, no DNA. You let them take them home. I listened to that trial. I wanted to hear the words crime scene log. Show me the log. Who all was there? I don't care if it was the chief, news reporter, the fireman, the ambulance, because when we have a murder, at least my experience in Waco, we do what's called a crime scene log. Everybody in that perimeter is identified on a sheet. Neighbor upstairs, their name and everything. Chief of police. If the chief don't have a reason to be there, he ain't coming because he's going to be on that crime scene log subject to a subpoena. No crime scene log. Vehicle's not processed. Vehicle's allowed to leave the scene. And I'm going to tell you, Linda Donikowski was a lot more polite to the Glynn County Police Department than I ever would have been, because I'd have tore their ass off the frame in that trial. Because, Joe, you are a homicide detective. Chief, you know nothing about that scene was secure.
Nothing. They didn't recover the weapons. They didn't test the cars. I mean, the crime scene, here's the thing, and people got to understand this. There's an old saying that dead men tell no tales. That's absolutely a lie. A forensic pathologist can tell you more about that body than anyone else. They can tell you time of death, cause of death, which was the fatal blow, how the blow came. So for them to be able to blow the crime scene off is absolute nonsense. The weapons recovered. I think they recovered 2 months after. Come on. They never even processed the cars.
I'm just going to start off. I mean, it's a systemic issue, right? Knowing about the corruption issue, knowing about what we've heard about this particular department from the beginning was the reason of this. They showed up, this former DA investigator, whatever he is, McMichael, told them this is what happened, and they took his word, and that was it. That was it. There was no follow-up. I mean, look, every dead body is a murder, right? If it's a suicide, we start working as a murder.
Right.
Every one of them. We process them that way. We begin our investigation that way. From the beginning, from jump, this guy, this former law enforcement officer said, this is what happened. And they went, all right. And that's why it took so long for this to take place, right? It was so screwed up from the beginning that it's almost unfathomable to even believe that they got the guilty verdicts as they are today, because it was so screwed up from the word go, right? The crime scene was crucial. People should be held accountable for that, in my opinion. To process and to go through and get weapons months later rather than that day, that moment, is beyond me, absolutely friggin' beyond me.
Fellas, real quick, for some reason my light's flashing on my tablet. It keeps going, so I'm going to bow out for a second. I'll be right back in about 2-3 minutes.
Cool. I mean, I just got to throw in there, that this is beyond me. I'm not surprised by any of this. Because in saying, like, how could this happen or it was a screw-up, it kind of negates the blatant intentionality of the situation that Chief kind of touched on, the blatant corruption and intentionality that has come through, which we see in police departments around the country. I mean, if it involves a cop, a friend of a cop, a former cop, who gets stopped by his former fellow police officers, what do you think is going to happen? Is he going to go to jail right away? Maybe not. Possibly not. And even if he does get arrested, he's going to get to go home for a while before he ever gets interviewed or talked to. And this happens all the time. Look at the backlog of rape kits in police departments. And you're going to tell me, like, this stuff is happening all across the board all the time. Too often use words and like screw up or how could they do this? And it kind of lends an air it hides them in, like, incompetence. Like, oh, they're just incompetent. There's intention behind this stuff. They did this stuff. They knew what they were doing. They did it on purpose. They're all friends. They all knew each other. And they backed their friends up. We see it all the time. How many movies do you watch where the cops are always backing up the other cop no matter what he does? I mean, it's across the board. And if we're going to talk about things like, look at policing with, everybody talks about qualified immunity. We're going to talk about this DA. Nobody talks about the fact that prosecutors, for all intents and purposes, have full immunity for whatever they're doing mm-hmm. within the construct mm-hmm. of their jobs. They're performing it. They can do all this stuff. So why didn't she get in trouble? Because she can. She can do all of this stuff. Because she can say it was what I was doing in the performance of my duties. So I'm not surprised by any of it. or non-performance.
Exactly. But then, you know, we got to harken back to the quintessential question at hand. When we see these protests and we see these rallies and we see people that say the system is broken, which this is Stan. I don't believe the system is broken. I absolutely don't believe the system is broken. Somebody's got to echo. I believe that the system is functioning exactly how the system was designed to function, and that is, it's not all about just downing black people. It is about getting rid of poor and low-income people, or those who we feel are less desirable than ourselves. Because if Ahmaud Arbery would have been white and trailer park trash, so to speak, I believe those guys would have acted the same way, because they had this privileged attitude. They had this attitude that I am offended that you are in my neighborhood. Because let's remember, the McMichaels did go down and search out under a bridge where a white couple was at that had been in this apartment. So I look at all this, and I got to say, I think this entitlement attitude, this privilege attitude, this bullshit My America attitude, because you got a pocket constitution over here and a voter rights card over here, you own the country. What have we experienced for 3 years here? These Karens who have gone out and called the police on anybody, mostly black people, predominantly black people, because you're in my parking space, my rights, and the word my always comes out in this speech. They feel that they can call the police. Thank God the police are finally waking up to this bullshit, because they're tired of being sued and caught in the middle. It's not because they necessarily want to. They're tired of being sued, caught in the middle, and called out on social media. But we've let these Karens go for so long. And when I say the Karens, I mean the Kins too. And when I say the Karens and Kins, there's some black ones. There's some black ones in there that nobody wants to talk about. You can always find them. We all know in our circle who these people are. They're the people who always have a reason why this person did what they did. And what does the media do? They go grab that one. They don't grab Joe or Stan or Travis or John. They go get that person. And that's who they bring out as to all the reasons. So, I think we're just at a crossroads right now in justice, to where progress is being made, and kudos to those 11 white jurors and the black one who listened to the facts and didn't get snowballed by the good old boy system, because this is what we're talking about. Let's not hide under anything. We're talking about the good old boy system. They didn't get snowballed by it. They made a decision, and that DA, she brought fire. And she didn't even mention Ahmaud being black or what happened until she got to her rebuttal of the closing arguments. And she dismantled and destroyed that defense team. Floor's open.
But did you see the difference between the two trials? If you look at how the Rittenhouse trial versus the Arbery trial went, you saw the difference in eight jury selection. But here's one again. I got to get that judge. You saw, if we understand what judges are supposed to do, if you have a jury trial, the judge is supposed to be impartial. He's supposed to give direction. If there's a question, they ask him. In the Rittenhouse trial, the judge seemed more involved than he should have been if there's a jury. That's my opinion. You can check it out, see if you agree or disagree. The judge in the Arbery trial did his job more than I thought the other guy did. For instance, the judge in the Rittenhouse trial says, you can't call them victims. You have to call them rioters and looters.
Mm-hmm.
I've never, ever seen that happen in any court where the person that gets killed is the offender off the bat. Now, that's what you have a jury for. That's their job to decide who the offender is, who the victim is.
But in the Rittenhouse trial, Joe, the best attorney that Kyle Rittenhouse had was the judge.
No question.
You know, let me play a sound clip right quick and on the back side of it. I want to get everybody's comments.
My understanding, while I was cross-examining Investigator Lowry yesterday, is that the Right Reverend Al Sharpton managed to find his way into the back of the courtroom. I'm guessing he was somehow there at the invitation of the victim's family in this case. And I have nothing personally against Mr. Sharpton. My concern is that it's one thing for the family to be present. It's another thing to ask for the lawyers to be present. But if we're going to start a precedent starting yesterday, we're going to bring high-profile members of the African-American community into the courtroom to sit with the family during the trial in the presence of the jury. I believe that's intimidating, and it's an attempt to pressure, could be consciously or unconsciously, an attempt to pressure or influence the jury. Obviously, there's only so many pastors they can have, and if their pastor's Al Sharpton right now, that's fine, but then that's it. We don't want any more black pastors coming in here, or other Jesse Jackson, whoever was in here earlier this week, sitting with the victim's family trying to influence the jury in this case. But I think the court can understand my concern about bringing people in who really don't have any ties to this case other than political interests. And we want to keep politics out of this case.
Well, I will tell you that I noticed him once and that was it. And the fact that nobody else even noticed that he was in here means that everybody complied with this court's rulings on sitting in this courtroom and listening to the evidence. I don't hear a motion, and I will tell you this, I'm not going to blanketly exclude members of the public from this courtroom.
Now, that was the judge that you heard at the end. That, to me, is a judge that just laid it out and laid it down and said how he felt. And I'm going to open the floor up. You guys, chime in. Have at it.
I'll start. I believe I understand what he was trying to do. It doesn't make much sense because anybody can come into the courtroom. I don't necessarily know that if that were that much of a concern for him, that's the way he should have had the conversation to begin with. It's kind of stupid. He's an attorney. He's trying to do everything he can to get his client off, right? So he's going to throw out everything they possibly can to muddy the waters, to bring in reasonable doubt, to try to get their client off. But, you know, the judge is right. They have access to the court. They can sit in there. I don't necessarily know that they bring any undue influence on the jury's decision, but, you know, the judge got that one right. I think he got it 100% right.
Travis, you down here. You're muted. There you go. Can you hear me, Travis?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you now. Go ahead.
Can you hear me, Travis?
You got an echo, Travis. Are you playing a monitor?
That's the reason why I'm having these problems.
Yeah, you got a monitor running. There's an echo. You should only be able to hear through your headphones. There's an echo.
Good idea. Good idea.
There you go. Rip cord. You there?
No. Rip cord.
Yeah, we still got an echo.
Yeah.
All right, let me go over. Ed, what you think?
I agree. I mean, I agree with what the judge said. However, I do think that the defense attorney made an interesting – I mean, I think it was interesting when he says that we have to separate politics from this case. I spoke to a while back. I spoke to a former capital offense lawyer. I asked him that exact question. I'm like, do we need to separate politics from these kind of criminal justice decisions? Now, he was talking about capital punishment, but what he said is, in his opinion, he said that you can't separate politics from the law because The answers don't lie in law books. It lies in politics. It's that people bring their thoughts, background, and experience to the decision-making. And he quoted Yates, who said, how can we know the dancer from the dance? You can't separate politics from legal decisions because the answer doesn't lie in the law book. It lies in what the court thinks is the right answer. And the decision on whether someone should live or die is a moral decision that we make in the justice system. So how do you separate that from a person's individual politics? Which that just reminded me of this, because I think while the defense attorney is doing his job, I think what he's trying to pursue doesn't really exist. I don't think you can separate politics from these decisions.
John, what do you think?
I tend to agree with Izzy. Trial is about storytellers, man, who can narrate their story the best, the prosecutor and the defense attorney. For me, the jury is still out, because what I'm afraid of is that there are a lot of critical mistakes that were made that, like, for an example, I had an attorney tell me during trial that he was purposely going to make some errors so that I can have appellate issues. He also told me that he's going to trip the prosecutor into, he said this prosecutor is aggressive, and I'm going to trip him into falling into a trap, the doors for appeal. So while we celebrate, we still have to sit and wait, man, because there's going to be a lot of appellate issues that are going to be raised from this case, just from talking about some of the mistakes that were made early. So we have to just sit back and wait, man, before we just start celebrating and saying they did this right and did that right. There was a lot of mistakes that were made, and that's where my thoughts are at.
You know, John, and I want everybody to recognize now that soundbite I just played that offended probably some folks and had folks cringe. Go back a soundbite ago when they talked about Kevin Goff, the attorney who challenged Jackie Johnson, who didn't even want to bring this trial up at all. This was the guy who fought with her in court regularly. This was the guy you heard that talked about how she had deprived victims or suspects of equal justice, and all the indiscretions that she did in accordance to the grand jury. This is the same guy. And that's why I said we got to really, really be careful when MSNBC, Fox, or somebody blows something up. Follow us, because we know better than you, and you don't research. Oh, that guy's an absolute racist. He's probably a Klan member. He's this, he's that. And then you go back a couple months in September, and this guy was fighting, and they cited a case where he had two black defendants that he was representing. And he was calling out the DA back then, and nobody was listening. So we need to do research and be careful and make sure. We just can't take what we hear in a trial. Yeah, I didn't like what I heard. I thought that it really, he hurt his client's case, and that's probably another defense that will come up later. Joe, you and I talked about that. But, you know, that's something that's going to come up later, no doubt. But do your research, ladies and gentlemen. Be careful. Let me play one more clip, because time is moving quick, so I want to play this other one. Let's see. Here we go.
Because all we can guess about the young man is that his teenage years were full of promise, but his early 20s just led him in the wrong direction. The facts presented in this trial bear no resemblance to the story that the state told you in opening statement. A 25-year-old who met a brutal death after being chased and killed by residents of a neighborhood who wanted nothing more than to murder him for having the audacity to jog in their neighborhood. Not a single piece of evidence that's been presented to you in this entire trial supports such a hateful and gruesome set of circumstances. Turning Ahmaud Arbery into a victim after the choices that he made does not reflect the reality of what brought Ahmaud Arbery to Satilla Shores in his khaki shorts with no socks to cover his long, dirty toenails. There were two sets of decision makers on February 23rd. It is not just the McMichaels decisions that led to this tragedy. And it is a tragedy. I see it in your faces, and I have felt it in mine.
Okay,
because all we
right
can
there.
Guess about the young
right.
man
I got to cut
is
this
that
lady
his
off.
Teenage years.
Because she's full of bullshit. But when she said I saw it in mine, you own this, lady. You now own this. The hell with the courtroom. You own this. Travis, come on, brother.
Can y'all hear me now?
Yes, without an echo. Thank God.
I don't know what's going on with this system. I have to work that kinks later.
You better start calling me early.
It's that thing I've been talking about, and you said it already. Trump has inspired so many people in this country to just say what they want to say, when they want to say it, and even how they want to say it. It's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. When somebody gets shot and killed, I don't know how you can sit here and say they're not the victim. I don't know how you can say that. But they tried to make it seem like he wasn't. And they used every little dirty racist tactic they could use to flip this jury into saying, hey, he was the criminal. He broke in and stole stuff. Okay, fine. Y'all want to say that, then that's okay. You keep saying racism doesn't exist in this country. White privilege don't exist in this country. And then you turn around and shove it right in our face and still say it don't exist. That young man was executed. I don't care what anybody says. And for somebody, and this is something that's happened on my page, I don't know what's happened on Stan, that I've had people who look just like me, same skin color and everything, to sit there and say he shouldn't have been in that neighborhood. That's his fault. He shouldn't have broken that house. That is the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard anybody say. Me, if I was to do a GoFundMe today, I would be doing it for bail money. Because if I ever saw that bitch on the street somewhere, I probably would pimp slap her. I would pimp slap her.
All right, bro.
Honestly, I would do it. That is the most ridiculous thing anybody's ever said to a victim. I don't care if he's white or black. I don't even care about that. But y'all made the trial about white and black. The DA didn't. And also the attorney that made the statement that Ahmaud Arbery's family had the best attorney's money could buy. I didn't know you could buy the DA. The DA was appointed by the state, appointed by the people.
That part.
I didn't know that.
That part.
So that part right there is what really got me. See, those are the people you want to catch on the street, and I don't care. Aluminum back, wood back, I don't care. If they get injured, I don't care about those people. Because to sit there and turn that young man into public enemy number one for dying, for getting shot and killed, you made him public enemy number one, but you let Larry Moe and Curly get away. For 10.5 weeks, those people weren't even considered getting arrested. Mm-hmm. They were living their lives, barbecuing. They were doing everything. And you just shot and killed somebody.
And Travis, let's not forget, though, when you finally got down to where now, you know, in Glynn County, which I haven't been through Glynn County unless I did it unknowingly. And if I did, that means we didn't stop nowhere, thank God. But, you know, in Glynn County where they didn't even know they were screwing up. And this is the problem I have with Georgia. Georgia don't know what the hell Georgia's doing. And when they get caught in a bind, they come to Fulton County, Cobb County. They come to Atlanta, figure their way out. And I tell people on my page, you know, y'all need to understand, you hear about Atlanta, how great Atlanta is. Atlanta is not Georgia. Southern Georgia, northeastern Georgia is as racist as it's ever been. just like, hello, Texas, you're not off the hook. Don't tell me you've been to Dallas or Fort Worth. You go to East Texas, as racist as it's ever been. That is a fact. But anyway, let me grab a caller real quick, 314 area code 4600. Good morning, brother. How you doing?
Good morning, Stan. How you doing?
I'm all right. What's up?
I agree with you. I'm going to have to go back a little bit to Mr. Brooks, because you've been moving pretty fast this morning. And, yeah. No, I agree with what you made mention about Mr. Brooks. And I was going to tell Chief Devlin, Devlin, if you and I was standing in the street 100 feet apart, Mr. Brooks would have directed his car towards you. Because the way it appears and the way the data show, he was trying to kill white people. Brooks is a racist. And yes, he's a terrorist. Because I sure in the hell would have been terrified if I was there and he was trying to run me down. And he's dumb. He parked his car with the bumper facing toward the street in his driveway, runs over to his neighbor and wanted to use the phone in order to call the Uber. But the major thing, too, that disturbs me is that this man has been doing this for a long time and being let loose on practically no retainage whatsoever to go out in the streets and do the crime all over again. That there is really, and you know you have to feel so sad for those people, grandfathers and their grandchildren out trying to have a nice time. But that was really sad. And I think the verdict.
I'm sorry if I am real quick, though, brother. I mean, to me, you know, and this is my thing with it. I want the outrage to be on the act. You know, I mean, I like I said in my example, when what happened in Charleston happened, everybody was outraged. Well, what happened here happened, and this is a Christmas party. This is not even we're taking down a statue or Black Lives Matter rally. And this guy chose to do this. It's heinous, but I'm stunned at the lack of post, the lack of goodwill towards justice. Not justice for me or people that look like me, but just justice itself. And that's missing. And I'm wondering why.
Well, you know, I'm like you. I believe in people do bad things because I've been in so many cases and observed so much stuff around the world that I see that we're talking about people. You know, like you're talking about these prosecutors. Prosecutors misabuse the justice system all the time, and they're just not white. You got black ones do the same thing. Look at Kim Fox in Chicago with Jussie Smollett. Kim Gardner in St. Louis with some of the things that she says. Prosecutors are prosecutors, and they're human beings. Now, it's up to the people themselves that elect these folks, elect these people to realize and understand what they've been bamboozled, basically, and hopefully that they will correct that problem. And
brother, you know, you talk about elections. I'm not going to disagree with you there, but I'm going to say this. You know, where do you go when nothing seems to be right? When you've got Democrats that are so far left that they're crazy, and they cause people like this guy we saw at the Christmas party. But then you got Republicans that are so far evangelical right that they create people like Kyle Rittenhouse and then offer to give them Senate staffing positions. Somewhere in the middle, There's those of us in America of all colors, and I'm not even going to give rich people the benefit of the doubt because, by and large, they're absent from the conversation from a constructive perspective. But for those of us in the middle that are middle class, low middle class, and damn near poor, or poor living in an alley, we recognize that which is true. Not black or white, it is true. So what do you get? What's the solution? How do we fix it?
Well, people have to be more astute. I ask you a question. Should we boycott Ford because he used a SUV the way we want to boycott gun manufacturers and ammunition manufacturers? People need to be more astute and logical thinking.
No. I'll tell you what. I would say if we were in Texas, we absolutely not only boycott Ford, let's sue Ford.
Absolutely.
If we're going to sue the abortion people, the people who drove the Uber drivers, if we're going to do all that, see, this is the slope we've gotten down to today. America has lost touch with what is real and what is not, what is reasonable and what is not. And America has gone over the edge. Black people are fighting. We're not even fighting for justice. We got to be recognized first before we can get justice. And this video with Ahmaud Arbery was the perfect example. The district attorney had the video. She had it. She chose not to indict these men. But when it got out into social media and people got a hold of it, now not only do we have a guilty verdict, but her ass is in jail.
Well, you know what? Here's a case in Dellwood, Missouri, right next to Ferguson, with a lady by the name. Hang on, but this is the same thing. A lady by the name of Eleanor Reasonover. The police chief had a video to show that she was not guilty. In trial, she was one vote from being put to death. One vote. And later on, they find his videotape in his bottom drawer. So this stuff goes on, Stan. You got some bad people.
I agree. But you know what? I think that Black America is tired of being the story that goes on to where we all on social media learn that somebody is now released from jail after 15, 20 years in prison because they didn't do it. The justice system needs to be revamped. Let me get some rebuttal real quick. I'm still got
to and also the news media need to be revamped because I can tell you stories where that has happened to other people too.
I agree, bro.
But thank you very
media,
much,
we gonna fight because I say let's get Fox News ass off the air first off. That is the most racist, far-right news media you could have on. And MSNBC is to the left, but Fox News is crazy. Get rid of Tucker Carlson. Joe, I see you partner, brother. Come on.
Well, now that you've had your conversation with Clayton Bigsby,
thank you.
it's just amazing. Where he comes from, but that's his thought. So, you know, this is a show where everybody has an opinion, and I give you that. But let's bring this back to where it's supposed to be. We're talking about a system, or at least I thought we were talking about two different juries and how we saw two different parts of the world in the same space and the same time. Again, when you reflect upon everything that was done or not done correctly, you have to take into account those issues. As you and I have talked, that prosecutor tore it up. She did her job. Now, a couple of the issues came up when I was listening, and we talked about qualified immunity. I can't name a time that any DA or any judge has been censured or put in jail for bad decisions. I can tell you a lot of policemen that have been put in jail. I can tell you that. The fact that this girl is finally being censured, they gave her a bond. She got an I bond, for God's sake. Come on. Again, who is this system designed to work for? I mean, Richard Pryor used to tell the joke, just us. And it's very apropos. But I have to give some recognition and some thanks to those jurors that saw through that bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it was 12 people, 12. Now, let's not call them black or white. Let's call them what they are, jurors. Because in the process, that's what they're known as. So we have to look at it and dissect it and say, what went, well, I can tell you what went right. Because I can tell you what could have happened had that jury gone the opposite way. This place was going to be on fire from Atlanta. This would have been the second great burning of America. I'm telling you, from Chicago to Wisconsin to Atlanta to Florida to California, every police department was on high alert. Am I right, Chief? Every department. And there was not a one that was not somewhat prepared. But again, how do you prepare for something in our lifetime we're not used to? We're talking almost a second insurrection, second civil war for all intents and purposes. Now, are there people that want that to happen? I would say yes.
But we have to look at this thing in a total. So, again, let me go back to where I started at. Thank you to those jurors. Thank you to that judge. Thank you to the prosecutor. I also remember this. She was a special prosecutor.
Hello.
She was brought in.
Hello.
Understand that. She was brought in. So that should tell you something. Somebody saw something and said, wait a minute, let's do something. Let's do this another way. So I thank you for all of those guys.
And Joe,
and look at the, let me just run this one. When the defense attorney said there's not enough Bubba's on the jury, he was trying for a mistrial. We know that.
Right.
Go ahead.
Now, before I go to the chief to comment, let me play something real quick.
It was not a citizen's arrest. They never said it. None of the defendants saw Mr. Arbery commit any crime that day. They were detaining him for the police so that they could investigate and find the crime that he must have committed that day, because what is he? He's running down the street. That's not the law, ladies and gentlemen. Not the law at all. Travis McMichael, remember all his assumptions? He got up here and I wrote them all down. He may have run by. Matt Albenzi may have seen him. He may have broken in. Maybe the owner's down there. He may have been caught. He may be trying to avoid the police. That's testimony from the witness stand. He didn't know anything. Absolutely nothing. So where are we going to end up? This is where we're going to end up. Travis McMichael had probable cause to believe that Ahmad stole the stuff off the English boat in 2019 because his mother gave him some gossip about stuff being stolen. And he was escaping. Use your common sense. How do you escape from a crime on an unknown date in 2019 on February 23rd, 2020? I'm sure they'll explain it to you. But use your common sense. And remember, what do you think? You think all this was completely made up for trial? Especially given no one ever said it on February 23rd, 2020?
Mm-hmm. Chief, come on.
That sums up this whole case. I mean, the first question should have been, well, what did he do? Nobody can tell you what he did.
Because he didn't do
that. So, because he didn't do anything. So, therefore, the only crime that was committed was him being murdered. I mean, again, I go back to what I said earlier from the beginning of this case. The decisions that were made were piss poor. They were intentional, mm-hmm. and it was because of the good old boy system. That's it. It's the bottom line. It was mismanaged, and unfortunately, it was uncovered. It was uncovered by some bigger people, right? And they got it right. I hate that it happened. To me, it's a crack stain on our profession. Well, we got plenty of them, but this one is bad. Because it pigeonholes us all into one specific type of category, and they did this intentionally. It was intentional. It was, hey, he said this happened. All right, cool. We're gonna move on down the road, and it's piss poor. It's not even human for that type of decision. It's bad. It's bad, bad, bad. But they got it right. Somebody discovered it. It's a shame that somebody had to discover it, and that wasn't done that day. Go ahead, Joe.
Let me just agree and disagree a little bit. The crime that was committed was a murder. The crime was he was black. He got killed because he was a black kid running in this so-called bastion of whiteness. And the unfortunate part is everybody on this board, it could have been us. It could have been your kid. It could have been my kid. It could have been my nephew. I mean, the unfortunate part is that everybody on this board understands, has a meaningful construct of rights and liberties. But we use this word, and you've heard me say this before, common sense ain't common, goddammit.
But, Joe, you know
what it is.
And, if I sat and heard about these concerned citizens throughout that trial, I heard about the concerned citizens, how concerned they were, their neighborhood. But then I also heard the crime was so bad. Oh, the crime is horrendous. We've got to take up arms. We got to do it ourselves. Our poor little Hicktown Police Department is worked to death. We got to do it. And so I'm just stuck with how great a place is this place by what I heard in the trial. You all live there. You're happy. Everybody gets along. But all your shit's getting broken into.
Well,
nothing, but nothing's getting solved. So you now have to become the police. So your police department can't be all that because the word citizens on patrol were never mentioned. The word citizens arrest weren't even mentioned in their statements until they got to court. So, I mean, I just look at this community, and I'm not knocking everybody in the community. I don't know the community. But here's a place where you're saying how bad it is. Everybody's shit is getting broken into. But you focus on the black guy. Never mind all the videos of the white people coming in and out of the same house, but you focus on the black guy. That's fine. The black guy is running for his life, but he never stops to knock on any doors. Gee, why not? Huh. Wouldn't happen to be history, would it? So now, then we go forward to a district attorney who knows two of these yahoos, who doesn't even want to press charges. Citizens arrest, everything's good. Never mind the fact they never said citizens arrest to any of the officers who took statements that presented them to her as the district attorney. But then when we talk about a good old boy system, and people are, oh, they're just making that up. And just imagine that. That doesn't happen. That's bullshit. It is real. And it's coming out, and it's getting caught. And this lady should be prosecuted. Travis, I see you, and you're down. You're right down here in Georgia.
Well, let's go ahead and put it into perspective real quick. Georgia has had that citizens arrest law on books for decades.
1861.
Now,
Civil War.
So what it is that the problem I hate with the justice system in this country is, number one, we're reactive instead of proactive. We don't ever try to put something in place to fix it. Now we wait till something bad and catastrophic happens, and then we say, hey, man, we got to fix this. Well, see, you've done something with the citizens arrest law in Georgia. Now you took it off the books. So can't nobody do a citizens arrest anymore. So that's a good thing. I guess, is it a good thing? If I caught somebody coming out of my neighbor's house with a flat screen TV, I can't do anything. Now I have to call the police, which is probably the smart thing to do. That's probably the smart thing. But what I wanted to do is, real quick, because I know in my 2 minutes, I'm going to get out of way. Chief, I would love to come to Waco and meet you one day. What you said just spoke volumes, but I do disagree with you on one thing. It doesn't put y'all in a bad light. You're not a white supremacist. You're not a KKK member that I know of. I can tell you. Okay, well, then I know for a fact that that's not you. So when you say that, the problem that we have in this country is being able to classify, right? For starters, I'm not those people that live in Chicago in the hood. I'm not them. So when you say all black people do is sit around and murder each other, and that's a lie. And we can't distinguish the difference between good black people, just like I say good white people, and those idiots that were actually in Brunswick, Georgia, with the signs of talking about free these three idiots. So when we don't ever know the difference between that, I think we're always going to have a problem with identity on both sides. On both sides. Because I know a damn racist when I see one. All you got to do is talk to me for 10 seconds, and I'm going to say, let me get the hell away from this dude or something happens. She definitely can talk to me for 3 hours. I suck down a beer and talk and just do all that stuff with you. Because I see that. Izzy, I see that. All you guys on the panel, I see that. Joe, I love you to death. That Clayton Bigsby almost knocked me out of my chair. You said volume on what I wanted to say to that guy, but I promise Dan I would keep it down and I would not, you know, say what's on my mind. But I would welcome him to come to my show because then that way I ain't got no filters and I ain't got nothing holding me back. I don't wear a leash.
And try to
I cannot stand when I hear black people trying to defend what these racist white people do. I'm sick of that. That hurts me to my core. Because if he hasn't been around long enough to see what's going on in this country,
then I'm sorry. You either been under a rock, freeze dried, or doing all my time. I ain't figured it out yet. But you know what's going on in this country.
You got to remember something. It's easy for somebody from the outside to come into your place and tell you how to sleep in your house when they never lived in your house.
Exactly.
It's easy for somebody to take you to come up and pull yourself up by the bootstrap when you even got leather on the boots and you must lift have a shoelace. But
well,
that has changed. You know, the other thing that people looked over was that there were three prosecutors that recused themselves in their case. Jackie Johnson was not the first one.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually three of them.
Oh,
yeah. So I'm more interested to see what they're going to do with the rest of these people because they all, one guy cited not enough resources. Wait a minute. Not enough resources.
Joe, I can tell you this. That Fulton County did not spend money on Clinton County. I guarantee you that. Now, they sent a badass shark prosecutor down there, and that lady came down there and dealt them.
Look at this. Here's what got me.
Yeah.
When they started talking about citizens arrest, first thing came to mind was Evan Mayberry. I swear to God, I started laughing. Citizens arrest, and it was almost some Hooterville shit.
But, Joe, when I hear citizens arrest nowadays, I see in my head Carrington Kent. That is what I see. Because
what you should see is slave country.
You know, she articulated it, and she did the damn thing. And I said it before, and I'll reiterate it again. This lady did that closing argument on that case. Linda Gronkowski. Yeah, she did that closing argument. She didn't go up on a Malcolm X platform. She went all the way through. And what I loved about this lady, she took the time to explain. And all of us on here have some police experience. But the people that don't, my house was robbed. Well, your house can't be robbed. Your house is not a person. Your house can be burglarized. She went down through and explained what burglary is, what you need. She showed them on the video what a mob was wearing. Did he come with burglary too? She really took the time to walk that jury through understanding, because this lady was sharp enough to know. Understanding that no felony was committed was a long step in getting in with that jury. And she walked them through it. And she called this a bunch of runaway slave catchers without saying it, without having to give the racial notation. Now, they gave their explanation, and she came back on her redress to their rebuttal, and she took them out the frame.
They're going to target her next. Trust me.
They ain't going to mess with her.
Oh, shit. Hell, if they don't.
They ain't going to mess with her.
They'll find a way to mess with her.
They ain't going to mess with that lady. That lady, okay. Sir. They ain't going to mess with her.
Hey, Stan. We always talk about how cameras are making a difference. And the one place that we don't talk about where cameras make the most difference to me is in the courtroom. When you see some of the stuff that is pulled on these cameras in the courtroom, imagine those guys who are all sitting behind bars. And I'm not speaking out for justice for the people that sit behind bars. I'm just speaking on what takes place. When a judge, usually who's supposed to be the referee, usually becomes the second prosecutor in cases. When a prosecutor and judge are convinced that this person is guilty because the judge has inside information, they tend to push it. They push it to the limits, and the judge will go as far as, well, this may be appealable, but I think I did just enough so that the conviction will stand. How many people in America are not getting the benefit of having cameras in the courtroom?
John, maybe brother. No. Good point. Because, you know what, I think the biggest problem is getting this legal system, this good old boy system, to acknowledge the validity and potential evidentiary value of what is captured on the video. This is a perfect example. Here we had a district attorney who had the video. She had it. She said there's nothing here to see. But then when it got out there, not CNN, MSNBC, it got out to John and Joe and Stan and Jim Devlin and just normal-ass people. And it got shared and likes and views and clicks came. Somebody's asked for a hot seat now. So now the video became relevant. And I think it's sad when social media has to co-sign evidence before a judge has enough guts to sit up there in a courtroom and admit it. Now, they have no problem. 70s, 80s, everybody, grainy, but the big old real-to-real video cameras are set in stores. They'd have no problem putting your ass in jail for shoplifting off that grainy video. But now that everybody has video, their video is good. Yours isn't.
Right.
And that's the problem with the system.
But you raise a good issue, though, Stan, because here's the thing. Somebody on social media gets the footage, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it still don't mean that it's admissible in the court, because now a judge may have to say, well, this is, if it's secondhand information, even though it's on camera, it becomes hearsay. You don't have direct, if you didn't directly record it and you gave it to Izzy, mm-hmm. and Izzy turned it over, it becomes hearsay. It becomes hearsay information. So there are exceptions to the hearsay rule, but how many people get that benefit? The system is crazy, Stan. We sit back and, you know, we talk about the justice because of cameras, but sometimes a lot of this information can't even get into court,
mm-hmm.
because it was passed on to someone else, and someone else said, you know what, I'm going to do the right thing and reveal this information. But now this person don't want to come forward who filmed it, so it may not be admissible evidence.
Absolutely. Well, we're at the 12-minute mark, so we want to go around and start winding down and get everybody's final thoughts, because we want to give everybody enough time to get in how they're feeling. Travis, take about 2 minutes, brother. Sum it up.
I don't ever take 2 minutes. I prefer my time to everybody else.
And you still got that echo. I have
everything turned down.
Somebody's echoing. I know it ain't
me. I have everything turned down.
Okay, go ahead, brother. You good?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So, I don't want to take a big amount of time. I yield my 2 minutes. I just wanted to say great show. And I'll definitely come back. I would like to invite each and every one of you to come on my show. The point on Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, and let's continue this. Heat it and combat it.
And you did good, Travis. I gotta give you credit, because I'm gonna tell you, yo, that's my boy. And Travis is unvarnished black middle class opinion. You just go get it the way it is. But he really toned it down today. Travis could use some vernacular. That's just Travis. It's not wrong, but he really toned down. You did good. You got your 40 crow. I'm going to send Big Crow over there with a high five for you. You know, appreciate you being there, brother. He choked up.
Oh, boy.
I mean, you made it through, bro. You didn't call nobody the C word. You know what I'm talking about. You know, cracker. You ain't called nobody a cracker. Nobody got cussed out. The N word didn't come, but that's how you do your show. But and I listen to your show. But I want to acknowledge that you toned it down and you were still effective and you choked up. So with that, we're gonna move around the horn. Big Chief, what's going on, bro? Take us out.
Hey, another fantastic show. You know, great information. I tell you what, John, that point of honor about the cameras in the court. Hell, I never even thought about what that could potentially do, especially when, you know, he starts talking about,
and some of the misconduct that may be taking place inside the courtroom. I mean, I got cameras. I've had cameras on me since 1994. So, you know, a very, very interesting topic. Very, there's something to really think about. But again, fantastic show, great information, and you know, that's it. I'll yield the rest of my time to, for Joe. We'll take it all up.
Yeah, Big Joe. Come on, Big Joe.
I see they got jokes today. Yes, yes.
Both y'all in the library. Y'all smart. Y'all in the library. Isn't he in the art museum? I'm just at the house.
Yeah, well, that's why your picture is smoking. You know,
smoke.
You know,
yeah.
I agree. Everything that's been said, you know, I agree with it. Of course, with my brother from another mother, Izzy, you know, you can't disagree with this guy. I'm, as bad as I want to, I just can't. The guy, I mean, you almost want to hug the little guy, but be that as it may, the reality is, no, this, everything that we talk about is right on point. I think that it is of great concern that we don't get to see what's happening in those, on those courtrooms,
mm-hmm.
because at least those of us who've been in those courtrooms know, you know, judges are, for all intents and purposes, gods. I mean, I hate to use that term, but it's true. You go into somebody's courtroom, and if they've got a attitude with you, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I agree. I think that would be a great thing. But, if again, going back to the Rittenhouse, one of the things that the judge said was, I don't know if I'll ever allow cameras back in. So, no, you're right on the money, guys, and I agree.
Well, he didn't need to because he scared people's kids across America the way he looked. You know.
Shit, he scared me.
Big
and
John.
I got a gun.
Big John, what you thinking?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to thank Travis for showing up. And I want to, I just want to, no, he did his thing like always. I want to say about the guy that always called in. I'm convinced that you do it intentionally because you never in agreement when, about when injustice is done to someone of color.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always an opposing view. And once in a while you had a different view, then maybe I would say that there's some integrity to the stuff that you say. But I'm almost convinced that it's intentional. And my closing art statement is this, that we have to take race out of the courtroom. We have to take race out of the courtroom. If you continue to bring race in the courtroom, we will never get justice. Because for a white person who never experienced racism, would not be able to relate to racism in a courtroom. But if you make the person not black but human, which kind of like what the prosecutor did in this case, and there's going to be a lot of people that disagree with me, but if you make them relate, make them see the person as human, they can relate to the human. They cannot relate to racism because most have not experienced, but they have experienced as a human. Done.
Good point, bro. And when we take race out, let's take the socioeconomic class out too. Because just as we're dealing with people on a racial issue, they're dealing with people on a socioeconomic ladder too. That's why we throw away our homeless and our poor people, and we never stop to prosecute those who made them homeless or poor. You know, Izzy?
Oh, well, here we go.
Got my seatbelt on.
Buckle up, baby. Buckle up.
I mean, I want to hug both John and Stan based on those last two things. Taking race and class out of the courthouse. That sounds adorable and also inherently impossible. I think just the amount of effort you have to put into making sure that a jury can see somebody with black skin as human is already a problem for that equation. Because they don't have to, you don't have to deliberate for hours with a jury when it's a white person. Like, oh, they're white, that's fine, they're human, that's how that works. I think that the whole talking about this guy, we brought him up earlier, the guy Brooks, and also the Ahmed Aubrey thing, everything that's going on, I think we have to, if we're not going to look past these, as Travis said, these reactive decisions and these reactive responses to situations and start dealing with, like, correctively with these issues, we're not going to make any headway. And I think that in terms of having corrective action, we need to have more more conversations. I bring this up all the time. We have more conversations about the culture that leads to these things happening. Why are politicians speaking out openly racist against people of color who are their their fellow congressmen? Because they're empowered to do that, but they're also afraid and angry. Because that's sort of clear, everybody, we're all existing in a time now where you can't really use minority to describe people anymore. We're getting past that because it's no longer the minority. White people are going to be the minorities in about 20, 30 years. And that scares people, and it makes them angry. So you have to look at that. You also have to look at this guy, Brooks, who did the heinous act that he did. And he's a symptom. We want to call him a terrorist, that's fine. Call him a terrorist. But terrorists are a symptom of a problem that exists. And if we want to correct that and stop problems like that happening, we need to start making corrective action because there's going to be more outbursts of anger. He is a symptom of anger. Stan likes to say that the black community are very forgiven, and they incredibly are, because we're lucky there aren't more people like this guy who are just outwardly, overtly, hostily angry at white people for all the inaction, all the cruelty that that community has experienced for literally 400 years. And if we're not going to take corrective action, then Stan asks, how do we fix that? Start off with education. If you're not going to provide people with education and basic needs so that they can live their lives, we're going to run into continual anger, continual hostility. Because a lot of people in these communities, in these economic sense, feel like they are an occupied force. They are constantly dealing with aggression. They are constantly dealing with militant action. They are constantly dealing with a reaction from the community that is always punitive. Like, it's not just that these people who went after Ahmaud Arbery felt like that they were empowered to do that. Why was their response in that community? Oh, there's all these robberies happening, all these burglaries happening. Why is the response to take up a gun and try and shoot somebody? Why isn't the response to improve education, social services, healthcare, access to food, access to jobs? If we respond with that, we can fix a lot of these problems. But if our only response is to continue to be punitive, we're going to keep hitting our heads against the same wall over and over and over again. That's all I got.
All right, brother. Appreciate everybody for being here. With that, we're going to get out of here. Joe, Chief, everybody, thank y'all. Appreciate y'all. Travis, where can they find The Point once again?
Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern.
That is your echo, because you go back and listen. This you. I'm going to get on you later. Hey, but it ain't bad, bro. But no, we're going to get out. Appreciate everybody. Hard topic, good discussion. Facebook. Appreciate you guys, Harrisburg, PA, Waco, Texas, Atlanta, Georgia. Appreciate you guys. We're going to get out. Everybody be safe, and we're gone.
See ya.
Bye.